words, and she still used them sparingly. Danica had initially hated it when Bryce said them to her, even when Bryce explained that she'd spent most of her life saying it just in case it was the last time, in case she wouldn't get to say goodbye to the people who mattered most. And it had taken one of their more fucked up adventures, a trashed motorcycle, and literally having guns pointed at their heads, to get Danica to utter the words. But at least she now said them. Sometimes. Forget Briggs's release. Sabine must have really done a number on Danica. Bryce's heels clacked on the worn tile floor as she headed for the stairs at the end of the hall. Maybe she should cancel on Reed. She could grab some buckets of ice cream from the corner market and cuddle in bed with Danica while they watched their favorite absurd comedies. Maybe she'd call up Fury and see if she could pay a little visit to Sabine. But she'd never ask that of Fury. Fury kept her professional shit out of their lives, and they knew better than to ask too many questions. Only Juniper could get away with it. Honestly, it made no sense that any of them were friends. The future alpha of all wolves, an assassin for high-paying clients waging war across the sea, a stunningly talented dancer and the only fawn ever to grace the stage of the Crescent City Ballet, and her, Bryce Quinlan, assistant to a sorceress, would-be wrong-body-type dancer, chronic dater of preening breakable human men who had no idea what to do with her, let alone what to do with Danica, if they ever got far enough into the dating crucible. Bryce clomped down the stairs, scowling at one of the orbs of first light that cast the crumbling gray-blue paint in flickering relief. The landlord went as cheap as possible on the first light, likely siphoning it off the grid, rather than paying the city for it like everyone else. Everything in this apartment building was a piece of shit, to be honest. Danica could afford better. Bryce certainly couldn't. And Danica knew her well enough not to even suggest that she alone pay for one of the high-rise glossy apartments by the river's edge or in the CBD. So after graduation, they'd only looked at places Bryce could swing with her paycheck, this particular shithole being the least miserable of them. Sometimes, Bryce wished she'd accepted her monstrous father's money, wished she hadn't decided to develop some semblance of morals at the exact moment the creep had offered her mountains of gold marks, in exchange for her eternal silence about him. At least then, she'd currently be lounging by some sky-high pool deck, ogling oiled-up angels as they swaggered past, and not avoiding the lech of a janitor who leered at her chest any time she had to complain about the trash chute being blocked yet again. The glass door at the bottom of the stairwell led onto the night-darkened street, already packed with tourists, revelers, and bleary-eyed residents trying to squeeze their way home through the rowdy crowds after a long, hot summer day. A drocky male clad in a suit and tie rushed past, messenger bag bobbing at his hip as he wove his way around a family of some sort of equine shifters. Perhaps horses, judging by their scents full of open skies and green fields. All so busy snapping photos of everything that they remained oblivious to anyone trying to get somewhere. At the corner, a pair of bored Malakim clad in the black armor of the 33rd kept their wings tucked in tight to their powerful bodies, no doubt to avoid any harried commuter or drunk idiot touching them. Touch an angel's wings without permission, and you'd be lucky to lose just a hand. Firmly shutting the glass door behind her, Bryce soaked in the tangle of sensations that was this ancient, vibrant city. The dry summer heat that threatened to bake her very bones. The honk of car horns slicing through the steady hiss and dribble of music leaking from the revel halls. The wind off the Istros River, three blocks away, rustling the swaying palms and cypresses, the hint of brine from the nearby turquoise sea, the seductive, night-soft smell of the crawling jasmine wrapped around the iron park fence nearby, the tang of puke and piss and stale beer, the beckoning, smoky spices crusting the slow-roasting lamb at the vendor's cart on the corner. It all hit her in one awakening kiss. Trying not to snap her ankles on the cobblestones, Bryce breathed in the nightly offering of Crescent City, drank it deep, and vanished down the teeming street. Chapter 4. The Pearl and Rose was everything Bryce hated about this city, but at least Danica now owed her 50 silver marks. The bouncers had let her stride past them, up the three steps, and through the open bronze-plated doors of the restaurant. But even 50 silver marks wouldn't put so much as a dent in paying for this meal. No, this would be firmly in the gold zone. Reed could certainly afford it. Given the size of his bank account, he likely wouldn't even glance at the check before handing over his black card. Seated at the table in the heart of the gilded dining room, under the crystal chandeliers dangling from the intricately painted ceiling, Bryce went through two glasses of water and half a bottle of wine while she waited. 20 minutes in, her phone buzzed in her black silk clutch. If Reed was canceling on her, she'd kill him. There was no fucking way she could afford to pay for the wine. Not without having to give up dance classes for the next month. 2 months, actually. But the messages weren't from Reed, and Bryce read them 3 times before chucking her phone back in her purse and pouring another glass of very, very expensive wine. Reed was rich, and he was late. He owed her. Especially since the upper echelons of Crescent City were entertaining themselves by sneering at her dress, the skin on display, the fey ears but clearly human body. Half-breed. She could nearly hear the hateful term as they thought it. They considered her a lowly worker at best, prey and dumpster fodder at worst. Bryce took out her phone and read the messages a 4th time. Connor had written, "You know I'm shit with talking. But what I wanted to say, before you tried to get in a fight with me instead, by the way, was that I think it's worth it, you and me, giving us a shot." He'd added, "I'm crazy about you. I don't want anyone else. I haven't for a long while. One date. If it doesn't work, then we'll deal with it. But just give me a chance. Please." Bryce was still staring at the messages, her head spinning from all that God's damned wine, when Reed finally appeared, 45 minutes late. "Sorry, babe," he said, leaning in to kiss her cheek before sliding onto his chair. His charcoal gray suit remained immaculate, his golden skin glowing above the collar of his white shirt. Not one dark brown hair on his head was out of place. Reed had the easy manners of someone brought up with money, education, and no doors locked to his desires. The Redners were one of the few human families who had risen into Vanir high society and dressed for the part. Reed was meticulous about his appearance, down to the very last detail. Every tie he wore, she'd learned, was selected to bring out the green in his hazel eyes. His suits were always impeccably cut to his toned body. She might have called him vain, had she not put such consideration into her own outfits. Had she not known that Reed worked with a personal trainer for the exact reason that she kept dancing, beyond her love for it. Making sure her body was primed for when its strength might be needed to escape any would-be predator hunting the streets. Since the day the Vanir had crawled through the Northern Rift and overtaken Midgard eons ago, an event historians called the Crossing, running was the best option if a Vanir decided to make a meal of you. That is, if you didn't have a gun or bombs, or any of the horrid things people like Philip Briggs had developed to kill even a long-lived, quick-healing creature. She often wondered about it, what it had been like before this planet had found itself occupied by creatures from so many different worlds, all of them far more advanced and civilized than this one, when it was just humans and ordinary animals. Even their calendar system hearkened to the Crossing, and the time before and after it, H-E and V-E. Human era and Vanir era. Reed lifted his dark brows at the mostly empty bottle of wine. "Nice choice." 45 minutes, without a call or a message to tell her he'd be late. Bryce gritted her teeth. "Something came up at work?" Reed shrugged, scanning the restaurant for high-ranking officials to hobnob with. As the son of a man who had his name displayed in 20-foot letters on 3 buildings in the CBD, people usually lined up to chat with him. Some of them, Malachim, are restless about developments in the Panjaran conflict. They needed reassurance their investments were still sound. The call ran long. The Panjaran conflict. The fighting Briggs so badly wanted to bring to this territory. The wine that had gone to her head eddied into an oily pool in her gut. The angels think the war might spread here? Spying no one of interest in the restaurant, Reed flipped open his leather-bound menu. No, the Asteri wouldn't let that happen. The Asteri let it happen over there. His lips twitched downward. It's a complicated issue, Bryce. Conversation over. She let him go back to studying the menu. Reports of the territory across the Haldron Sea were grim. The human resistance was prepared to wipe themselves out rather than submit to the Asteri and their elected Senate's rule. For 40 years now, the war had raged in the vast Panjaran territory, wrecking cities, creeping toward the stormy sea. Should the conflict cross it? Crescent City, sitting on Valbara's southeastern coast, midway up a peninsula called the Hand for the shape of the arid mountainous land that jutted out, would be one of the first places in its path. Fury refused to talk about what she saw over there, what she did over there, what side she fought for. Most Vanir did not find a challenge to more than 15,000 years of their reign amusing. Most humans did not find 15,000 years of near slavery, of being prey and food and whores, to be all that amusing either. Never mind that in recent centuries, the Imperial Senate had granted humans more rights, with the Asteri's approval, of course. The fact remained that anyone who stepped out of line was thrown right back to where they'd started, literal slaves to the Republic. The slaves, at least, existed mostly in Panjera. A few lived in Crescent City, namely among the warrior angels in the 33rd, the governor's personal legion, marked by the SPQM slave tattoo on their wrists. But they blended in, for the most part. Crescent City, for all that its wealthiest were grade-A assholes, was still a melting pot, one of the rare places where being a human didn't necessarily mean a lifetime of menial labor. Though it didn't entitle you to much else. A dark-haired, blue-eyed fey female caught Bryce's cursory glance around the room, her boy toy across the table marking her as some sort of noble. Bryce had never decided whom she hated more, the winged Malachim or the fey. The fey, probably, whose considerable magic and grace made them think they were allowed to do what they pleased, with anyone they pleased. A trait shared by many members of the House of Sky and Breath. The swaggering angels, the lofty sylphs, and the simmering elementals. House of shitheads and bastards, Danica always called them. Though her own allegiance to the House of Earth and Blood might have shaded her opinion a bit, especially when the shifters and fey were forever at odds. Born of two houses, Bryce had been forced to yield her allegiance to the House of Earth and Blood as part of accepting the Civitas rank her father had gotten her. It had been the price paid for accepting the coveted citizen status. He'd petition for full citizenship, but she would have to claim Sky and Breath as her house. She'd resented it, resented the bastard for making her choose, but even her mother had seen that the benefits outweighed the costs. Not that there were many advantages or protections for humans within the House of Earth and Blood, either. Certainly not for the young man seated with the fey female. Beautiful, blonde, no more than 20, he was likely a tenth of his fey companion's age. The tanned skin of his wrists held no hint of the four-lettered slave tattoo. So he had to be with her through his own free will, then. Or desire for whatever she offered. Sex, money, influence. It was a fool's bargain, though. She'd use him until she was bored, or he grew too old, and then dump his ass at the curb, still craving those fey riches. Bryce inclined her head to the noble woman, who bared her two white teeth at the insolence. The fey female was beautiful, but most of the fey were. She found Reed watching, a frown on his handsome face. He shook his head at her and resumed reading the menu. Bryce sipped her wine, signaled the waiter to bring over another bottle.
I'm crazy about you.
Connor wouldn't tolerate the sneering, the whispering. Neither would Danica. Bryce had witnessed both of them rip into the stupid assholes who'd hissed slurs at her, or who mistook her for one of the many half-veneer females who scraped a living in the meat market by selling their bodies. Most of those women didn't get the chance to complete the drop, either because they didn't make it to the threshold of maturity, or because they got the short end of the stick with a mortal lifespan. There were predators, both born and trained, who used the meat market as a personal hunting ground. Bryce's phone buzzed, right as the waiter finally made his way over, fresh bottle of wine in hand. Reed frowned again, his disapproval heavy enough that she refrained from reading the message until she'd ordered her beef with cheese foam sandwich. Danica had written, "Dump the limp-dicked bastard and put Connor out of his misery. A date with him won't kill you. He's been waiting years, Bryce. Years. Give me something to smile about tonight." Bryce cringed as she shoved her phone back into her bag. She looked up to find Reed on his own phone, thumbs flying, his chiseled features illuminated by the dim screen. Their invention 5 decades ago had occurred right in Redner Industries' famed tech lab and vaulted the company into unprecedented fortune. A new era of linking the world, everyone claimed. Bryce thought they just gave people an excuse not to make eye contact or be bad dates. "Reed," she said. He just held up a finger. Bryce tapped a red nail on the base of her wine glass. She kept her nails long and took a daily elixir to keep them strong. Not as effective as talons or claws, but they could do some damage, at least enough to potentially get away from an assailant. "Reed," she said again. He kept typing and looked up only when the first course appeared. It was indeed a salmon mousse, over a crisp of bread and encaged in some latticework of curling green plants. Small ferns, perhaps. She swallowed her laugh.
"Go ahead and dig in," Reed said distantly, typing again. "Don't wait for me."
"One bite and I'll be done," she muttered, lifting her fork, but wondering how the hell to eat the thing. No one around them used their fingers, but... The fey female sneered again. Bryce set down the fork, folded her napkin into a neat square before she rose. "I'm going."
"All right," Reed said,
eyes fixed on his screen. He clearly thought she was going to the bathroom. She could feel the eyes of a well-dressed angel at the next table travel up her expanse of bare leg, then heard the chair groan as he leaned back to admire the view of her ass, exactly why she kept her nails strong. But she said to Reed, "No, I'm leaving. Thank you for dinner." That made him look up.
"What? Bryce, sit down, eat."
As if his being late, being on the phone, weren't part of this. As if she were just something he needed to feed before he fucked. She said clearly, "This isn't working out." His mouth tightened.
"Excuse me."
She doubted he'd ever been dumped. She said with a sweet smile, "Bye, Reed. Good luck with work."
"Bryce."
But she had enough goddamned self-respect not to let him explain, not to accept sex that was merely okay, basically in exchange for meals at restaurants she could never afford, and a man who had indeed rolled off her and gotten right back on that phone. So she swiped the bottle of wine and stepped away from the table, but not toward the exit. She went up to the sneering fey female and her human plaything and said in a cool voice that would have made even Danica back away,
"Like what you see."
The female gave her a sweeping glance, from Bryce's heels to her red hair to the bottle of wine dangling from her fingers. The fey female shrugged, setting the black stones in her long dress sparkling.
"I'll pay a gold mark to watch you two."
She inclined her head to the human at her table. He offered Bryce a smile, his vacant face suggesting he was soaring high on some drug.
Bryce smirked at the female.
I didn't know fey females had gotten so cheap. Word on the street used to be that you'd pay us gold by the armful to pretend you're not as lifeless as reapers between the sheets.
The female's tan face went white. Glossy, flesh-shredding nails snagged on the tablecloth. The man across from her didn't so much as flinch. Bryce put a hand on the man's shoulder. In comfort or to piss off the female, she wasn't sure. She squeezed lightly, again inclining her head toward the female, and strode out. She swigged from the bottle of wine and flipped off the preening hostess on her way through the bronze doors, then snatched a handful of matchbooks from the bowl atop the stand, too. Reed's breathless apologies to the noble drifted behind her as Bryce stepped onto the hot, dry street. Well, shit. It was 9 o'clock, she was decently dressed, and if she went back to that apartment, she'd pace around until Danica bit her head off. And the wolves would shove their noses into her business, which she didn't want to discuss with them at all. Which left one option. Her favorite option, fortunately. Fury picked up on the first ring.
What? Are you on this side of the Haldron, or the wrong one? I'm in Five Roses.
The flat, cool voice was laced with a hint of amusement, practically outright laughter coming from Fury.
But I'm not watching television with the pups.
Who the hell would want to do that? A pause on the line. Bryce leaned against the pale stone exterior of the Pearl and Rose.
I thought you had a date with What's-His-Face.
You and Danica are the worst, you know that? She practically heard Fury's wicked smile through the line.
I'll meet you at the Raven in 30 minutes. I need to finish up a job.
Go easy on the poor bastard.
That's not what I was paid to do.
The line went dead. Bryce swore and prayed Fury wouldn't reek of blood when she got to their preferred club. She dialed another number. Juniper was breathless when she picked up on the fifth ring, right before it went to audio mail. She must have been in the studio, practicing after hours, as she always did, as Bryce loved to do whenever she had a spare moment herself, to dance and dance and dance, the world fading into nothing but music and breath and sweat.
Oh, you dumped him, didn't you?
Did motherfucking Danica send a message to everyone?
No,
the sweet, lovely fawn replied.
But you've been on your date for only an hour, since the recap calls usually happen the morning after.
We're going to the Raven, Bryce snapped. Be there in 30. She hung up before Juniper's quicksilver laugh set her cursing. Oh, she'd find a way to punish Danica for telling them, even though she knew it had been meant as a warning, to prepare them for any picking up the pieces, if necessary. Just as Bryce had checked in with Connor regarding Danica's state earlier that evening. The White Raven was only a 5-minute walk away, right in the heart of the old square, which left Bryce with enough time to either really, truly get into trouble, or face what she'd been avoiding for an hour now. She opted for trouble. Lots of trouble. Enough to empty out the 7 hard-earned gold marks in her purse as she handed them over to a grinning, drocky female, who slipped everything Bryce asked for into her waiting palm. The female had tried to sell her on some new party drug.
Synth will make you feel like a god, she said.
But the 30 gold marks for a single dose had been well above Bryce's pay grade. She was still left with 5 minutes. Standing across from the White Raven, the club still teeming with revelers despite Briggs's failed plan to blast it apart, Bryce pulled out her phone and opened the thread with Connor. She'd bet all the money she'd just blown on Mirthroot that he was checking his phone every 2 seconds. Cars crawled past, the bass of their sound systems thumping over the cobblestones and cypresses, windows down to reveal passengers eager to start their Thursday. Drinking, smoking, singing along to the music, messaging friends, dealers, whoever might get them into one of the dozen clubs that lined Archer Street. Queues already snaked from the doors, including the Ravens. Vanir peered up in anticipation at the white marble facade, well-dressed pilgrims waiting at the gates of a temple. The Raven was just that, a temple, or it had been. A building now encased the ruins, but the dance floor remained the original ancient stones of some long-forgotten god's temple, and the carved stone pillars throughout still stood from that time. To dance inside was to worship that nameless god, hinted at in the age-worn carvings of satyrs and fauns drinking and dancing and fucking amid grapevines. A temple to pleasure, that's what it had once been, and what it had become again. A cluster of young mountain lion shifters prowled past, a few twisting back to growl an invitation. Bryce ignored them and sidled over to an alcove at the left of the Raven's service doors. She leaned against the slick stone, tucked the wine into the crook of her arm, braced a foot on the wall behind her as she bobbed her head to the music pouring out of a nearby car, and finally typed, "Pizza, Saturday night at 6. If you're late, it's over." Instantly, Connor began typing in reply. Then the bubble paused, then started again. Then finally, the message came. "I'll never keep you waiting." She rolled her eyes and wrote, "Don't make promises you can't keep." More typing, deleting, typing. Then, "You mean it? About the pizza?"
"Do I look like I'm joking, Connor?"
"You looked delicious when you left the apartment." Heat curled in her, and she bit her lip. Charming, arrogant bastard.
"Tell Danica I'm going to the Raven with Juniper and Fury. I'll see you in 2 days."
"Done. What about what's-his-face?"
"Reed is officially dumped."
"Good. I was getting worried I'd have to kill him." Her gut churned. He quickly added, "Kidding, Bryce. I won't go alpha hole on you. I promise." Before she could answer, her phone buzzed again. Danica this time.
"How dare you go to the Raven without me, traitor?"
Bryce snorted.
"Enjoy pack night, loser."
"Do not have fun without me. I forbid you."
She knew that as much as it killed Danica to stay in, she wouldn't leave the pack. Not on the one night they all had together, the night they used to keep the bonds between them strong. Not after this shitstorm of a day, and especially not while Briggs was on the loose, with a reason to get back at the whole pack of devils. That loyalty was why they loved Danica, why they fought so fiercely for her, went to the mat for her again and again, when Sabine publicly wondered if her daughter was worthy of the responsibilities and status as second in line. The power hierarchy among the wolves of Crescent City was dictated by dominance alone. But the three-generation lineage that made up the prime of the wolves, prime apparent, and whatever Danica was, the apparent prime apparent, was a rarity. Powerful ancient bloodlines was the usual explanation. Danica had spent countless hours looking into the history of the dominant shifter packs in other cities, why lions had come to rule in Hylene, why tigers oversaw Corinth, why falcons reigned in Oya. Whether the dominance that determined the prime alpha status passed through families or skipped around. Non-predatory shifters could head up a city's ox, but it was rare. Honestly, most of it bored Bryce to tears, and if Danica had ever learned why the Fendir family claimed such a large share of the dominance pie, she'd never told Bryce. Bryce wrote back to Connor,
"Good luck handling Danica."
He simply replied, "She's telling me the same about you." Bryce was about to put her phone away when the screen flashed again. Connor had added, "You won't regret this. I've had a long while to figure out all the ways I'm going to spoil you, all the fun we're going to have."
Stalker.
But she smiled. "Go enjoy yourself. I'll see you in a few days. Message me when you're home safe." She reread the conversation twice, because she really was an absolute fucking loser, and was debating asking Connor to skip waiting and just meet her now, when something cool and metal pressed against her throat.
"And you're dead,"
crooned a female voice. Bryce yelped, trying to calm the heart that had gone from stupid giddy to stupid scared in the span of one beat.
"Don't fucking do that,"
she hissed at Fury, as the female lowered the knife from Bryce's throat and sheathed it across her back.
Don't be a walking target,
Fury said coolly, her long onyx hair tied high in a ponytail that brought out the sharp lines of her light brown face. She scanned the line into the raven, her deep-set chestnut eyes marking everything and promising death to anyone who crossed her. But beneath that, mercifully, the black leather leggings, skin-tight velvet top, and ass-kicking boots did not smell of blood. Fury gave Bryce a once-over.
You barely put on any makeup. That little human should have taken one look at you and known you were about to dump his ass. He was too busy on his phone to notice.
Fury glanced pointedly at Bryce's own phone, still clenched in a death grip in her hand.
Danica's going to nail your balls to the wall when I tell her I caught you distracted like that.
It's her own damn fault, Bryce snapped. A sharp smile was her only response. Bryce knew Fury was Vaneer, but she had no idea what kind, no idea what house Fury belonged to either. Asking wasn't polite, and Fury, aside from her preternatural speed, grace, and reflexes, had never revealed another form, nor any inkling of magic beyond the most basic. But she was a Civitas, a full citizen, which meant she had to be something they deemed worthy. Given her skill set, the House of Flame and Shadow was the likeliest place for her, even if Fury was certainly not a demonaki, vampire, or even a wraith. Definitely not a witch-turned-sorceress like Jessiba, either. Or a necromancer, since her gift seemed to be taking life, not illegally bringing it back.
Where's the leggy one?
Fury asked, taking the wine bottle from Bryce and swigging, as she scanned the teeming clubs and bars along Archer Street.
Hell if I know, Bryce said.
She winked at Fury and held up the plastic bag of mirth root, jostling the 12 rolled black cigarettes.
I got us some goodies.
Fury's grin was a flash of red lips and straight white teeth. She reached into the back pocket of her leggings and held up a small bag of white powder that glittered with a fiery iridescence in the glow of the street lamp.
So did I.
Bryce squinted at the powder.
Is that what the dealer just tried to sell me?
Fury went still.
What'd she say it was?
Some new party drug? Gives you a godlike high? I don't know. Super expensive. Fury frowned.
Synth? Stay away from it. That's some bad shit.
All right. She trusted Fury enough to heed the warning. Bryce peered at the powder Fury still held in her hand.
I can't take anything that makes me hallucinate for days, please. I have work tomorrow.
When she had to at least pretend she had some idea how to find that god's damned horn. Fury tucked the bag into her black bra. She swigged from the wine again before passing it back to Bryce.
Jessiba won't be able to scent it on you. Don't worry.
Bryce linked elbows with the slender assassin.
Then let's go make our ancestors roll over in their graves.
Chapter 5. Going on a date with Connor in a few days didn't mean she had to behave. So within the inner sanctum of the White Raven, Bryce savored every delight it offered. Fury knew the owner, Rizzo, either through work or whatever the hell she did in her personal life, and as such, they never had to wait in line. The flamboyant butterfly shifter always left a booth open for them. None of the smiling, colorfully dressed waiters who brought over their drinks so much as blinked at the lines of glittering white powder Fury arranged with a sweep of her hand, or the plumes of smoke that rippled from Bryce's parted lips as she tipped her head back to the domed, mirrored ceiling and laughed. Juniper had a studio class at dawn, so she abstained from the powder and smoke and booze. But it didn't stop her from sneaking away for a good 20 minutes with a broad-chested fey male, who took in the dark brown skin, the exquisite face and curling black hair, the long legs that ended in delicate hooves, and practically begged on his knees for the fawn to touch him. Bryce reduced herself into the pulsing beat of the music, to the euphoria glittering through her blood faster than an angel diving out of the sky, to the sweat sliding down her body as she writhed on the ancient dance floor. She would barely be able to walk tomorrow, would have half a brain, but holy shit, more. Laughing, she swooped over the low-lying table in their private booth between two half-crumbling pillars. Laughing, she arched away, a red nail releasing its hold on one nostril as she sagged against the dark leather bench. Laughing, she knocked back water and elderberry wine and stumbled again into the dancing throng. Life was good. Life was fucking good, and she couldn't goddamn wait to make the drop with Danica and do this until the earth crumbled into dust. She found Juniper dancing amid a pack of sylph females celebrating a friend's successful drop. Their silvery heads were adorned with circlets of neon glow sticks, chock full of their friend's designated allotment of her own first light, which she generated when she successfully completed the drop. Juniper had managed to swipe a glow stick halo for herself, and her hair shone with blue light as she extended her hands to Bryce, their fingers linking as they danced. Bryce's blood pulsed in time to the music, as if she had been crafted just for this, the moment when she became the notes and rhythm and the bass, when she became song given form. Juniper's glittering eyes told Bryce that she understood, had always understood the particular freedom and joy and unleashing that came from dancing. Like their bodies were so full of sound, they could barely contain it, could barely stand it, and only dance could express it, ease it, honor it. Males and females gathered to watch, their lust coating Bryce's skin like sweat. Juniper's every movement matched hers without so much as a lick of hesitation, as if they were question and answer, sun and moon. Quiet, pretty Juniper Andromeda, the exhibitionist. Even dancing in the sacred ancient heart of the raven, she was sweet and mild, but she shone. Or maybe that was all the light seeker Bryce had ingested up her nose. Her hair clung to her sweaty neck. Her feet were utterly numb thanks to the steep angle of her heels. Her throat was ravaged from screaming along to the songs that blasted through the club. She managed to shoot a few messages to Danica, and one video because she could barely read any of what was coming in anyway. She'd be so royally fucked if she showed up at work tomorrow unable to read. Time slowed and bled. Here, dancing among the pillars and upon the time-worn stones of the temple that had been reborn, no time existed at all. Maybe she'd live here, quit her job at the gallery and live in the club. They could hire her to dance in one of the steel cages dangling from the glass ceiling high above the temple ruins that made up the dance floor. They certainly wouldn't spew bullshit about a wrong body type. No. They'd pay her to do what she loved, what made her come alive like nothing else. It seemed like a reasonable enough plan, Bryce thought, as she stumbled down her own street later with no recollection of leaving the Raven, saying goodbye to her friends, or of how the hell she'd even gotten here. Taxi? She'd blown all her marks on the drugs, unless someone had paid. Whatever, she'd think about it tomorrow, if she could even sleep. She wanted to stay awake, to dance for God's damn ever. Only, oh, her feet fucking hurt, and they were near black and sticky. Bryce paused outside her building door and groaned as she unstrapped her heels and gathered them in a hand. A code. Her building had a code to get in. Bryce contemplated the keypad as if it'd open a pair of eyes and tell her. Some buildings did that. Shit. Shit. She pulled out her phone, the glaring screen light burning her eyes. Squinting, she could make out a few dozen message alerts. They blurred, her eyes trying and failing to focus enough to read one single coherent letter. Even if she somehow managed to call Danica, her friend would rip her head off. The screech of the building buzzer would piss off Danica even more. Bryce cringed, hopping from foot to foot. What was the code? The code. Oh, there it was, tucked into a back pocket of her mind. She cheerfully punched in the numbers, then heard the buzz as the lock opened with a faint tinny sound. She scowled at the reek of the stairwell. That goddamned janitor. She'd kick his ass, impale him with these useless cheap stilettos that had wrecked her feet. Bryce set a bare foot on the stairs and winced. This was going to hurt. Walking on glass hurt. She let her heels clunk to the tile floor, whispering a fervent promise to find them tomorrow, and gripped the black painted metal banister with both hands. Maybe she could straddle the banister and scoot herself up the stairs. Gods, it stunk. What did the people in this building eat? Or, for that matter, who did they eat? Hopefully not wasted, stupid, high, half-fey females who couldn't manage to walk up the stairs. If Fury had laced the Lightseeker with something else, she'd fucking kill her. Snorting at the idea of even attempting to kill the infamous Fury Axtar, Bryce hauled herself up the stairs, step by step. She debated sleeping on the second level landing, but the stench was overwhelming. Maybe she'd get lucky and Connor would still be at the apartment, and then she'd really get lucky. Gods, she wanted good sex. No holds barred, scream your lungs out sex, break the bed sex. She knew Connor would be like that. More than that, it'd go far beyond the physical with him. It might honestly melt whatever was left of her mind after tonight. It was why she'd been a coward, why she'd avoided thinking about it from the moment he'd leaned in her doorway 5 years ago, having come to say hi to Danica and meet her new roommate, and they'd just stared at each other. Having Connor living four doors down freshman year had been the worst sort of temptation. But Danica had given the order to stay away until Bryce approached him, and even though they hadn't yet formed the pack of devils, Connor obeyed. It seemed Danica had lifted the order tonight. Lovely, wicked Danica. Bryce smiled as she half-crawled onto the third-floor landing, found her balance, and dug her keys out of her purse, which she'd managed to hold onto by some miracle. She took a few swaying steps down the hall they shared with one other apartment. Oh, Danica was going to be so pissed that Bryce had not only had fun without her, but that she'd gotten so wasted she couldn't remember how to read, or the code to the building. The flickering first light stung her eyes enough that she again squinted them to near darkness and staggered down the hall. She should shower, if she could remember how to operate the handles, wash off her filthy, numb feet. Especially after she stepped in a cold puddle beneath some dripping ceiling pipe. She shuddered, bracing a hand on the wall, but kept staggering ahead. Fuck, too many drugs. Even her fey blood couldn't clear them out fast enough. But there was her door. Keys, right. She had them in her hand already. There were six. Which one was hers? One opened the gallery, one opened the various tanks and cages in the archives, one opened Syrinx's crate, one was to the chain on her scooter, one was to her scooter, and one was to the door. This door. The brass keys tinkled and swayed, shining in the first lights, then blending with the painted metal of the hall. They slipped out of her slackening fingers, clanking on the tile. Fuck. The word was a long exhale. Bracing a hand on the doorframe to keep from falling clean on her ass, Bryce stooped to pick up the keys. Something cool and wet met her fingertips. Bryce closed her eyes, willing the world to stop spinning. When she opened them, she focused on the tile before the door. Red. And the smell. It wasn't the reek of before. It was blood. And the apartment door was already open. The lock had been mangled, the handle wrenched off completely. Iron. The door was iron, and enchanted with the best spells money could buy to keep out any unwanted guests, attackers, or magic. Those spells were the one thing Bryce had ever allowed Danica to purchase on her behalf. She hadn't wanted to know how much they'd cost, not when it was likely double her parents' annual salary. But the door now looked like a crumpled piece of paper. Blinking furiously, Bryce straightened. Fuck the drugs in her system. Fuck Fury. She'd promised no hallucinations. Bryce was never drinking or polluting her body with those drugs ever again. She'd tell Danica first thing tomorrow, no more, no more. She rubbed her eyes, mascara smearing on her fingertips, on her blood-soaked fingertips. The blood remained. The mangled door, too.
Danica,
she croaked. If the attacker was still inside. Danica? That bloody hand, her own hand, pushed the half-crumpled door open farther. Blackness greeted her. The coppery tang of blood and that festering odor slammed into her. Her entire body seized, every muscle going on alert, every instinct screaming to run, run, run. But her fey eyes adjusted to the dark, revealing the apartment. What was left of it? What was left of them? Help. She needed to get help, but she staggered into the trashed apartment.
Danica!
The word was a raw, broken sound. The wolves had fought. There wasn't a piece of furniture that was intact, that wasn't shredded and splintered. There wasn't a body intact, either. Piles and clumps were all that remained.
Danica, Danica, Danica!
She needed to call someone, needed to scream for help, needed to get Fury or her brother, her father, needed Sabine. Bryce's bedroom door was destroyed, the threshold painted in blood, the ballet posters hung in ribbons, and on the bed. She knew in her bones it was not a hallucination, what lay on that bed. Knew in her bones that what bled out inside her chest was her heart. Danica lay there, in pieces. And at the foot of the bed, littering the torn carpet in even smaller pieces, as if he'd gone down defending Danica. She knew that was Connor. Knew the heap just to the right of the bed, closest to Danica. That was Thorne. Bryce stared and stared. Perhaps time stopped. Perhaps she was dead. She couldn't feel her body. A clanging, echoing thunk sounded from outside, not from the apartment, but the hall. She moved. The apartment warped, shrinking and expanding as if it were breathing, the floors rising with each inhale, but she managed to move. The small kitchen table lay in fragments. Her blood-slick, shaking fingers wrapped around one of its wooden legs, silently lifting it over her shoulder. She peered into the hall. It took a few blinks to clear her contracting vision. The goddamned drugs! The trash chute hatch lay open. Blood that smelled of wolf coated the rusty metal door, and prints that did not belong to a human stained the tile floor, aiming toward the stairs. It was real. She blinked, over and over, swaying against the door. Real, which meant... From far away, she saw herself launch into the hallway, saw herself slam into the opposite wall and rebound off it, then scramble into a sprint toward the stairwell. Whatever had killed them must have heard her coming and hidden inside the trash chute, waiting for the chance to leap out at her or slink away unnoticed. Bryce hit the stairs, a glowing white haze creeping over her vision. It blazed through every inhibition, disregarded every warning bell. The glass door at the bottom of the stairs was already shattered. People screamed outside. Bryce leapt from the top of the landing. Her knees popped and buckled as she cleared the stairs, her bare feet shredding on the glass littering the lobby floor. Then they ripped open more as she hurtled through the door and into the street, scanning. People were gasping to the right. Others were screaming. Cars had halted, drivers and passengers all staring toward a narrow alley between the building and its neighbor. Their faces blurred and stretched, twisting their horror into something grotesque, something strange and primordial and... This was no hallucination. Bryce sprinted across the street, following the screams, the reek. Her breath tore apart her lungs as she hurtled along the alley, dodging piles of trash. Whatever she was chasing had gotten only a brief head start. Where was it? Where was it? Every logical thought was a ribbon floating above her head. She read them, as if following a stock ticker mounted on a building's side in the CBD. One glimpse, even if she couldn't kill it, One glimpse, just to ID it for Danica. Bryce cleared the alley, careening onto bustling Central Avenue, the street full of fleeing people and honking cars. She leapt over their hoods, scaling them one after another, every movement as smooth as one of her dance steps. Leap, twirl, arch, her body did not fail her. Not as she followed the creature's rotting stench to another alley, another and another. They were almost at the Istros. A snarl and roar rent the air ahead. It had come from another connected alley, more of a dead-end alcove between two brick buildings. She hefted the table leg, wishing she'd grabbed Danica's sword instead, wondering if Danica had even had time to unsheath it. No, the sword was in the gallery, where Danica had ignored Jessupa's warning and left it in the supply closet. Bryce launched herself around the alley's corner. Blood everywhere. Everywhere. And the thing halfway down the alley? Not Vanir. Not one she'd encountered before. A demon? Some feral thing with smooth, near-translucent gray skin. It crawled on four long, spindly limbs, but looked vaguely humanoid. And it was feasting on someone else. On a Malak. Blood covered the angel's face, soaking his hair and veiling the swollen, battered features beneath. His white wings were splayed and snapped. His powerful body arced in agony as the beast ripped at his chest with a maw of clear, crystalline fangs that easily dug through skin and bone. She did not think, did not feel. She moved, fast like Randall had taught her, brutal like he'd made her learn to be. She slammed the table leg into the creature's head so hard that bone and wood cracked. It was thrown off the angel and whirled, its back legs twisting beneath it while its front legs, arms, gouged lines in the cobblestones. The creature had no eyes, only smooth planes of bone above deep slits, its nose, and the blood that leaked from its temple. It was clear, not red. Bryce panted, the Malak male groaning some wordless plea as the creature sniffed at her. She blinked and blinked, willing the Lightseeker and Mirthroot out of her system, willing the image ahead to stop blurring. The creature lunged. Not for her, but the angel. Right back to the chest and heart it was trying to get to, the more considerable prey. Bryce launched forward, table legs swinging again. The reverberations against bone bit into her palm. The creature roared, blindly surging at her. She dodged, but its sharp, clear fangs ripped her thigh clean open as she twisted away. She screamed, losing her balance, and swung upward as it leapt again, this time for her throat. Wood smashed those clear teeth. The demon shrieked, so loudly that her fey ears nearly ruptured, and she dared all of one blink. Claws scraped, hissing sounded, and then it was gone. It was just clearing the lip of the brick building the Malak lay slumped against. She could track it from the streets, could keep it in sight long enough for the Ox or 33rd to come. Bryce had dared one step when the angel groaned again. His hand was against his chest, pushing weakly, not hard enough to stop the death bite from gushing blood. Even with his fast healing, even if he'd made the drop, the injuries were substantial enough to be fatal. Someone screamed in a nearby street as the creature jumped between buildings. Go, go, go! The angel's face was so battered it was barely more than a slab of swollen flesh. The table leg clattered into a puddle of the angel's blood as she dove for him, biting down her scream at the burning gash in her thigh. Someone had poured acid onto her skin, her bones. Unbearable, impenetrable darkness swept through her, blanketing everything within. But she shoved her hand against the angel's wound, not allowing herself to feel the wet, torn flesh, the jagged bone of his cleaved sternum. The creature had been eating its way into his heart. Phone, she panted. Do you have a phone? The angel's white wing was so shredded it was mostly red splinters, but it shifted slightly to reveal the pocket of his black jeans, the square lump in them. How she managed to pull out the phone with one hand was beyond her. Time was still snagging, speeding and stopping. Pain lanced through her leg with every breath. but she gripped the sleek black device in her wrecked hands, her red nails almost snapping with the force as she punched in the emergency number. A male voice answered on the first ring. Crescent City Rescue.
Help!
Her voice broke.
Help!
A pause. Miss, I need you to specify where you are, what the situation is.
Old Square, river, off the river near Signet Street.
But that was where she lived. She was blocks away from that. Didn't know the cross streets.
Please, please help.
The angel's blood soaked her lap. Her knees were bleeding, scraped raw. And Danica was. And Danica was. And Danica was.
Miss, I need you to tell me where you are. We can have wolves on the scene in a minute.
She sobbed then, and the angel's limp fingers brushed against her torn knee, as if in comfort.
Phone,
she managed, interrupting the responder.
His phone. Track it. Track us. Find us.
Miss, are you-
Track this phone number.
Miss, I need a moment to-
She pulled up the main screen of the phone, clicking through the pages in a haze until she found the number herself.
112-03-0577.
Miss, the records are-
112-03-0577,
she screamed into the phone, over and over.
112-03-0577.
It was all she could remember, that stupid number.
Miss- Holy gods.
The line crackled.
They're coming,
the responder breathed. He tried to inquire about the injuries on the male, but she dropped the angel's phone as the drugs pulled her back, yanked her down, and she swayed. The alley warped and rippled. The angel's gaze met hers, so full of agony she thought it was what her soul must look like. His blood poured out between her fingers. It did not stop. Chapter 6. The half-fae female looked like hell. No, not hell, Isaiah Tiberian realized, as he studied her through the one-way mirror in the Legion's holding center. She looked like death. Looked like the soldiers he'd seen crawl off the blood-drenched battlefields of Pangera. She sat at the metal table in the center of the interrogation room, staring at nothing, just as she had done for hours now. A far cry from the screaming, thrashing female Isaiah and his unit had found in the old square alley, her gray dress ripped, her left thigh gushing enough blood that he wondered if she'd faint. She'd been half wild, either from the sheer terror of what had occurred, the grief sinking in, or the drugs that had been coursing through her system. Likely a combination of all three, and considering that she was not only a source of information regarding the attack, but also currently a danger to herself, Isaiah had made the call to bring her into the sterile subterranean processing center a few blocks from the Comitium. A witness, he'd made damn sure the record stated, not a suspect. He blew out a long breath, resisting the urge to rest his forehead against the observation window. Only the incessant hum of the first lights overhead filled the space. The first bit of quiet he'd had in hours. He had little doubt it would end soon. As if the thought had tempted Erd herself, a rough male voice spoke from the door behind him.
She's still not talking.
It took all 2 centuries of Isaiah's training on and off the battlefield to avoid flinching at that voice, to turn slowly toward the angel he knew would be leaning against the doorway, wearing his usual black battle suit. An angel who reason and history reminded him was an ally, though every instinct roared the opposite. Predator. Killer. Monster. Hunt Athalar's angular dark eyes, however, remained fixed on the window, on Bryce Quinlan. Not one gray feather on his wings rustled. Ever since their first days in the 17th Legion in southern Pangera, Isaiah had tried to ignore the fact that Hunt seemed to exist within a permanent ripple of stillness. It was the bated silence before a thunderclap, like the entire land held its breath when he was near. Given what he'd seen Hunt do to his enemies and chosen targets, it came as no surprise.
Hunt's stare slid toward him. Right. He'd been asked a question. Isaiah shifted his white wings. She hasn't said a word since she was brought in. Hunt again regarded the female through the window.
Has the order come down yet to move her to another room?
Isaiah knew exactly what sort of room Hunt referred to. Rooms designed to get people to talk, even witnesses. Isaiah straightened his black silk tie and offered up a half-hearted plea to the five gods that his charcoal business suit wouldn't be stained with blood by sunrise.
Not yet.
Hunt nodded once, his golden brown face betraying nothing. Isaiah scanned the angel, since Hunt sure as hell wasn't going to volunteer anything without being prompted. No sign of the skull-faced helmet that had earned Hunt a nickname whispered down every corridor and street in Crescent City. The Umbra Mortis. The Shadow of Death. Unable to decide whether to be relieved or worried at the absence of Hunt's infamous helmet, Isaiah wordlessly handed Micah's personal assassin a thin file. He made sure his dark brown fingers didn't touch Hunt's gloved ones, not when blood still coated the leather, its scent creeping through the room. He recognized the angelic scent in that blood, so the other scent had to be Bryce Quinlan's. Isaiah jerked his chin to the white-tiled interrogation room.
Bryce Quinlan, 23 years old, half fae, half human. Blood test from 10 years ago confirmed she'll have an immortal lifespan. Power rating near negligible, hasn't made the drop yet. Listed as a full civitas. Found in the alley with one of our own, trying to keep his heart from falling out with her bare hands.
The words sounded so damn clinical. But he knew Hunt was well-versed in the details. They both were. They'd been in that alley, after all. And they knew that even here, in the secure observation room, they'd be fools to risk saying anything delicate aloud. It had taken both of them to get Bryce to her feet, only for her to collapse against Isaiah, not from grief, but from pain. Hunt had realized it first. Her thigh had been shredded open. She'd still been nearly feral, had thrashed as they guided her back to the ground, Isaiah calling for a medwitch as the blood gushed out of her thigh. An artery had been hit. It was a goddamn miracle she wasn't dead before they arrived. Hunt had cursed up a storm as he knelt before her, and she'd bucked, nearly kicking him in the balls. But then he'd pulled off his helmet, looked her right in the eye, and told her to calm the fuck down. She'd fallen completely silent, just stared at Hunt, blank and hollow. She didn't so much as flinch with each punch of the staple gun Hunt had pulled from the small medkit built into his battle suit. She just stared and stared and stared at the Umbra Mortis. Yet Hunt hadn't lingered after he'd stapled her leg shut. He'd launched into the night to do what he did best, find their enemies and obliterate them. As if noticing the blood on his gloves, Hunt swore and peeled them off, dumping them into the metal trash can by the door. Then the male leafed through Quinlan's thin file, his shoulder-length black hair slipping over his unreadable face.
Seems like she's your standard spoiled party girl, he said, turning the pages.
A corner of Hunt's mouth curved upward, anything but amused.
And what a surprise. She's Danica Fendir's roommate, the party princess herself.
No one but the 33rd used that term, because no one else in Lunathian, not even the Fae Royals, would have dared. But Isaiah motioned to keep reading. Hunt had left the alley before he'd learned the entire scope of this disaster. Hunt kept reading. His brows rose.
Holy fucking herd.
Isaiah waited for it. Hunt's dark eyes widened.
Danica Fendir is dead.
He read further.
Along with the entire pack of devils.
He shook his head and repeated,
Holy fucking herd.
Isaiah took back the file.
It is totally and completely fucked, my friend.
Hunt's jaw clenched.
I didn't find any trace of the demon that did this.
I know. At Hunt's questioning glance, Isaiah clarified, If you had, you'd be holding a severed head in your hands right now, and not a file. Isaiah had been there, on many occasions, when Hunt had done just that,
returning triumphant from a demon-hunting mission he'd been ordered to go on by whatever archangel currently held their reins. Hunt's mouth twitched slightly, as if remembering the last time he'd presented a kill in such a manner. But he crossed his powerful arms. Isaiah ignored the inherent dominance in the position. There was a pecking order among them, the five warrior team who made up the Triarii, the most elite of all the Imperial Legion units. Micah's little cabal. Though Micah had appointed Isaiah the commander of the 33rd, he'd never formally declared him its leader. But Isaiah had always assumed he stood right at the top, the unspoken finest soldier of the Triarii, despite his fancy suit and tie. Where Hunt fell, however, no one had really decided in the 2 years since he'd arrived from Pangera. Isaiah wasn't entirely sure he really wanted to know either. Tracking down and eliminating any demons who crept through cracks in the Northern Rift or entered this world through an illegal summoning was his official role, and one well-suited to Hunt's particular skill set. The gods knew how many of them he'd tracked down over the centuries, starting from that very first Pangeran unit they'd been in together, the 17th, dedicated to sending the creatures into the afterlife. But the work Hunt did in the shadows for the Archangels, for Micah, currently, that was what had earned him his nickname. Hunt answered directly to Micah, and the rest of them stayed out of his way. "Naomi just arrested Philip Briggs for the murders," Isaiah said, naming the captain of the 33rd's infantry. "Briggs got out of jail today, and Danica and the pack of devils were the ones who busted him in the first place." That the honor hadn't gone to the 33rd had irked Isaiah to no end. At least Naomi had been the one to apprehend him tonight. How the fuck a human like Briggs could summon a demon that powerful? I don't know. "I suppose we'll find out soon enough," Hunt said darkly. "Yeah, they fucking would. Briggs has to be 10 kinds of stupid to have been released only to go for a kill that big." The leader of the Kara's rebels, an offshoot of the larger rebellion movement, the Ophian, hadn't seemed dumb, though. Just a fanatic hell-bent on starting a conflict to mirror the war raging across the sea. "Or maybe Briggs acted on the sole chance of freedom he had before we found an excuse to bring him back into custody," Hunt countered. "He knew his time was limited and wanted to make sure he got one up on the Vanir first." Isaiah shook his head. "What a mess. Understatement of the century." Hunt blew out a breath. "Has the press gotten wind of anything?" "Not yet," Isaiah said. "And I got the order a few minutes ago that we're to keep it quiet, even if it'll be all over the news tomorrow morning." Hunt's eyes gleamed. "I've got no one to tell." Indeed, Hunt and the concept of friends didn't mesh well. Even among the Triarii, even after being here for 2 years, Hunt still kept to himself, still worked relentlessly toward one thing, freedom, or rather, the slim chance of it. Isaiah sighed. "How soon until Sabine gets here?" Hunt checked his phone. "Sabine's on her way downstairs, right?" The door blew open. Hunt's eyes flickered. "Now." Sabine looked barely older than Bryce Quinlan, with her fine-boned face and long, silvery blonde hair. But there was only an immortal's rage in her blue eyes. "Where is that half-breed whore?" she simmered, as she spotted Bryce through the window. "I'll fucking kill her." Isaiah extended a white wing to block the prime apparent's path back out the door and into the interrogation room, a few steps to its left. Hunt fell into a casual stance on her other side. Lightning danced along his knuckles. A mild showing of the power Isaiah had witnessed being unleashed upon their enemies. Lightning, capable of bringing down a building. Whether ordinary angel or archangel, the power was always some variation of the same. Rain, storms, the occasional tornado. Isaiah himself could summon wind capable of keeping a charging enemy at bay. But none in living memory possessed Hunt's ability to harness lightning to his will, or the depth of power to make it truly destructive. It had been Hunt's salvation and destruction. Isaiah let one of his cold breezes sift through Sabine's corn-silk hair, over to Hunt. They'd always worked well together. Micah had known it when he put Hunt with Isaiah 2 years ago, despite the entwined thorns tattooed across both their brows. Most of Hunt's mark was hidden by his dark hair, but there was no concealing the thin black band on his forehead. Isaiah could barely remember what his friend had looked like before those Pangeran witches had branded him, working their infernal spells into the ink itself, so they might never let his crimes be forgotten, so the witch magic bound the majority of his power. The Halo, they called it, a mockery of the divine auras early humans had once portrayed angels as possessing. There was no hiding it on Isaiah's brow either, the tattoo on it the same as on Hunt's, and on the brows of the nearly 2,000 rebel angels who had been such idealistic brave fools 2 centuries ago. The Asteri had created the angels to be their perfect soldiers and loyal servants. The angels, gifted with such power, had relished their role in the world. Until Shahar, the archangel they'd once called the Daystar. Until Hunt and the others who'd flown in Shahar's elite 18th Legion. The rebellion had failed, only for the humans to begin their own 40 years ago. A different cause, a different group and species of fighters. But the sentiment was essentially the same. The Republic was the enemy, the rigid hierarchy's utter bullshit. When the human rebels had started their war, one of the idiots should have asked the fallen angels how their rebellion had failed, long before those humans were ever born. Isaiah certainly could have given them some pointers on what not to do, and enlightened them about the consequences. For there was also no hiding the second tattoo, stamped on their right wrists, SPQM. It adorned every flag and letterhead of the Republic, the 4 letters encircled with 7 stars, and adorned the wrist of every being owned by it. Even if Isaiah chopped off his arm, the limb that regrew would bear the mark. Such was the power of the witch ink. A fate worse than death, to become an eternal servant to those they'd sought to overthrow. Deciding to spare Sabine from Hunt's way of dealing with things, Isaiah asked mildly, "I understand you are grieving, but do you have reason, Sabine, to want Bryce dead?" Sabine snarled, pointing at Bryce.
"She took the sword. The wannabe wolf took Danica's sword. I know she did. It's not at the apartment, and it's mine."
Isaiah had seen those details, that the heirloom of the Fendir family was missing. But there was no sign of Bryce Quinlan possessing it. "What does the sword have to do with your daughter's death?" Rage and grief warred in that feral face. Sabine shook her head, ignoring his question, and said,
"Danica couldn't stay out of trouble. She could never keep her mouth shut and know when to be quiet around her enemies. And look what became of her. That stupid little bitch in there is still breathing, and Danica is not."
Her voice nearly cracked.
"Danica should have known better."
Hunt asked a shade more gently.
"Known better about what?"
"All of it," Sabine snapped, and again shook her head, clearing her grief away. "Starting with that slut of a roommate." She whirled on Isaiah, the portrait of wrath. "Tell me everything."
Hunt said coolly,
"He doesn't have to tell you shit, Fendir."
As commander of the 33rd Imperial Legion, Isaiah held an equal rank to Sabine. They both sat on the same governing councils, both answered to males of power within their own ranks and their own houses. Sabine's canines lengthened as she surveyed Hunt.
"Did I fucking speak to you, Athalar?"
Hunt's eyes glittered, but Isaiah pulled out his phone, typing as he cut in calmly.
"We're still getting the reports in.
Victoria is coming to talk to Miss Quinlan right now."
"I'll talk to her," Sabine seethed,
her fingers curled as if ready to rip out Hunt's throat. Hunt gave her a sharp smile that told her to just try, the lightning around his knuckles twining up his wrist. And fortunately for Isaiah, the interrogation room's door opened, and a dark-haired woman in an immaculately tailored navy suit walked in. They were a front, those suits that he and Victoria wore. A sort of armor, yes, but also a last attempt to pretend that they were even remotely normal.
It was no wonder Hunt never bothered with them.
As Victoria made her graceful approach, Bryce gave no acknowledgement of the stunning female who usually made people of all houses do a double take. But Bryce had been that way for hours now. Blood still stained the white bandage around her bare thigh. Victoria sniffed delicately, her pale green eyes narrowing beneath the halo's dark tattoo on her brow. The Wraith had been one of the few non-Malachim who had rebelled with them 2 centuries ago. She'd been given to Micah soon afterward, and her punishment had gone beyond the brow tattoo and slave markings. Not nearly as brutal as what Isaiah and Hunt had endured in the Asteri's dungeons, and then in various Archangel's dungeons for years afterward, but its own form of torment that lasted even when their own had stopped. Victoria said,
"Miss Quinlan."
She didn't respond. The Wraith dragged over a steel chair from the wall and set it on the other side of the table. Pulling a file from her jacket, Victoria crossed her long legs as she perched on the seat.
"Can you tell me who is responsible for the bloodshed tonight?"
Not even a hitch of breath. Sabine growled softly. The Wraith folded her alabaster hands in her lap, the unnatural elegance the only sign of the ancient power that had rippled beneath the calm surface. Vic had no body of her own. Though she'd fought in the 18th, Isaiah had learned her history only when he'd arrived here 10 years ago. How Victoria had acquired this particular body, who it had once belonged to, he didn't ask. She hadn't told him. Wraiths wore bodies the way some people owned cars. Vanir Wraiths switched them often, usually at the first sign of aging. But Victoria had held on to this one for longer than usual, liking its build and movement, she'd said. Now she held on to it because she had no choice. It had been Micah's punishment for her rebellion, to trap her within this body. Forever. No more changing, no more trading up for something newer and sleeker. For 200 years, Vic had been contained, forced to weather the slow erosion of the body, now plainly visible. The thin lines starting to carve themselves around her eyes, the crease now etched in her forehead, above the tattoo's twining band of thorns.
"Quinlan's gone into shock," Hunt observed, monitoring Bryce's every breath. "She's not going to talk."
Isaiah was inclined to agree, until Victoria opened the file, scanned a piece of paper, and said,
"I, for one, believe that you are not in full control of your body or actions right now."
And then she read a shopping list of a cocktail of drugs and alcohol that would stop a human's heart dead, stop a lesser Vanir's heart, too, for that matter. Hunt swore again.
"Is there anything she didn't snort or smoke tonight?"
Sabine bristled.
"Half-breed trash."
Isaiah threw Hunt a look, all that was needed to convey the request. Never an order. He'd never dared to order Hunt around. Not when the male possessed a hair-trigger temper that had left entire Imperial fighting units in smoldering cinders. Even with the spells of the halo binding that lightning to a tenth of its full strength, Hunt's skills as a warrior made up for it. But Hunt's chin dipped, his only sign that he'd agreed to Isaiah's request.
"You'll need to complete some paperwork upstairs, Sabine."
Hunt blew out a breath, as if reminding himself that Sabine was a mother who had lost her only child tonight, and added,
"If you want time to yourself, you can take it, but you need to sign..."
"Fuck signing things, and fuck time to myself! Crucify the bitch if you have to, but get her to give a statement."
Sabine spat on the tiles at Hunt's booted feet. Ether coated Isaiah's tongue, as Hunt gave her the cool stare that served as his only warning to opponents on a battlefield. None had ever survived what happened next. Sabine seemed to remember that, and wisely stormed into the hall. She flexed her hand as she did, 4 razor-sharp claws appearing, and slashed them through the metal door. Hunt smiled at her disappearing figure. A target marked. Not today, not even tomorrow, but at one point in the future. And people claimed the shifters got along better with the angels than the Fae. Victoria was saying gently to Bryce,
We have video footage from the White Raven, confirming your whereabouts. We have footage of you walking home.
Cameras covered all of Lunathian, with unparalleled visual and audio coverage. But Bryce's apartment building was old, and the mandatory monitors in the hallways hadn't been repaired in decades. The landlord would be getting a visit tonight for the code violations that had fucked this entire investigation. One tiny sliver of audio was all the building cameras had managed to catch. Just the audio. It held nothing beyond what they already knew. The phones of the pack of devils had all been destroyed in the attack. Not one message had gone out.
What we don't have footage of, Bryce,
Victoria went on,
is what happened in that apartment. Can you tell me?
Slowly, as if she drifted back into her battered body, Bryce turned her amber eyes to Victoria.
Where's her family?
Hunt asked roughly.
Human mother lives with the stepfather in one of the mountain towns up north, both Peregrini, Isaiah said. The sire wasn't registered or refused to acknowledge paternity. Fae, obviously, and likely one with some standing, since he bothered to get her civitas status.
Most of the offspring born to human mothers took their Peregrini rank, and though Bryce had something of the Fae's elegant beauty, her face marked her as human. The gold-dusted skin, the smattering of freckles over her nose and high cheekbones, the full mouth. Even if the silken flow of red hair and arched ears were pure Fae.
Have the human parents been notified?
Isaiah dragged a hand over his tight brown curls. He'd been awoken by his phone's shrill ringing at 2 in the morning, hurtled from the barracks a minute after that, and now was starting to feel the effects of a sleepless night. Dawn was likely not far off.
Her mother was hysterical.
She asked over and over if we knew why they'd attacked the apartment, or if it was Philip Briggs. She saw in the news that he'd been released on a technicality and was certain he did this. I have a patrol from the 31st flying out right now. The parents will be airborne within the hour. Victoria's voice slid through the intercom as she continued her interview.
Can you describe the creature that attacked your friends?
But Quinlan was gone again, her eyes vacant. They had fuzzy footage thanks to the street cameras, but the demon had moved faster than the wind and had known to keep out of lens range. They hadn't been able to ID it yet. Even Hunt's extensive knowledge hadn't helped. All they had of it was a vague, grayish blur no slowdown could clarify. And Bryce Quinlan, charging barefoot through the city streets.
That girl isn't ready to give a statement, Hunt said. This is a waste of our time.
But Isaiah asked him,
why does Sabine hate Bryce so much? Why imply she's to blame for all this?
When Hunt didn't answer, Isaiah jerked his chin toward 2 files on the edge of the desk.
Look at Quinlan's. Only one standing crime before this, for public indecency during a summer solstice parade. She got a little frisky against a wall and was caught in the act. Holding cell overnight, paid the fine the next day, did community service for a month to get it wiped off any permanent record.
Isaiah could have sworn a ghost of a smile appeared on Hunt's mouth. But Isaiah tapped a calloused finger on the impressively thick stack beside it.
This